And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And that is hammered! Oh, my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far, I'd have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 55 of The Roundtable. This is the Tim Lincecum episode of the podcast, or maybe Minutemen. I don't know if we got some indie rock fans here, but I'm Grant Brisby here with Andy McCullough, Mark Carrig, and we are joined today very, very special guest, Evan Drolik. How you doing? We'll start with Evan. Evan, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, Grant. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark, how you doing?
Evan, you look fit. Are you fit?
I'm trying to be.
Man, you're like you're fit and trim, man.
I'm working
like
on
you're in fighting weight.
I'm working on. See me at the winter meetings.
Okay. I like what I see right now on the YouTube. Looking good. I feel like shit, Grant. I have barely slept. I spent the night at Newark Airport from like 9 o'clock in the morning until they banged my flight to Nashville at 3:30 in the morning. I spent another 2 hours trying to find any other flight out of the New York area to Nashville. I even entertained flying something like Spirit Airlines. Like, I would have done anything. I was looking at Greyhounds, nothing. So, otherwise, things are swell.
There wasn't a train?
No, there wasn't. Not that I saw.
What about a kindly polka troupe heading there for Christmas? You've done that?
Oh, that's from the movie, right? Was that Gus Walinski? What was his name?
John
the
Candy. Polka King. Well, yeah.
Yeah, Polka King of the Midwest. The Polka Twist.
Has it always been banged? Like, okay, the game got banged. I at one point thought it was bagged. Did anybody say bagged, or did I just not hear?
No, that was just adults, not trying to swear in front of you.
Right. No, I'm very sensitive.
Gonged used to be a thing.
In 50 minutes, I'm going to be on another podcast with Andy Baggerly, who had like the same story. You guys were in the Newark airport at the same time. He's trying to get to Toronto. He had to rent a car, but it's international. So there's all those complications. There's no trains. There's no, like, it's the same thing. It's straight planes, trains, and automobiles. I mean, he's selling curtain rings to make his way to Toronto. So
that's a different movie with John Candy, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, I'm crossing the streams.
You know, he's also in National Lampoon's Vacation.
Yeah, yep.
He was in a lot of films. Just thought you guys would want
to
know.
He was also in a very underrated The Great Outdoors, where he uses a lamp to shoot a bear in the butt.
We are specifically opening this podcast for the commenter under our podcast on Apple, YouTube, who said, you know, the actual baseball content starts, and he provided like a YouTube link like 8 minutes in. We're trying to break that record, pal. We see what you're doing. All right, Andy, do you have a roundtable head of the week?
Sure. Yeah, give me 1 second. Thank you all for the kind words last week while I was at my mini moon after getting married. It was a very nice, very nice day. Wonderful weekend. I'm pissed off that I'm back. Here we go. This is from Daniel P., who left this comment for me in a mailbag. He said, during the podcast, can Andy stop typing, stop eating in the comment section of articles about Alek Manoah as a way to piss off Mark? So yes, I have been had yet again. I am the person, I'm the guy in the comments who is saying that Alek Manoah needs to stop eating. And I'm also the guy in the comments of the Mets stories saying it's not Buck Showalter's fault. Buck Showalter is not to blame, I believe. I'm that guy.
You do that with your real name or your pseudonym?
I have a lot of accounts. I'm multi-accounting. I'm like Ali Mshirovich. That's an inside joke. No one will get that unless you're a real poker head.
No. Dude, that was bait, Mark. I think that's Buck bait.
Come on, just look, do it. Just
hate
do it.
Buck Showalter. I don't hate him. All right? I don't hate him. Let me repeat that. I do not hate Buck Showalter. I have no problem with Buck Showalter. In fact, the couple interactions we have had have been pleasant. He once helped me out a lot for a story that I was writing. I'm fine with him.
So this all right?
I do not hate this man. All right? Must say it was a long time ago. That's right, because I've been retired for a while. But look, all right, I don't hate him. All I'm saying is that he can't be absolved of any blame when a team underachieves as badly. That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying he might not be the genius that everybody says he is. Like, they talk about him like he's Bill Walsh. Bill Walsh won Super Bowls. Multiple. Okay? Buck Showalter hasn't done that. Now, is he a good major league manager? Sure. He's fine. All right? Not having a great year, but he's fine. I don't hate Buck Showalter. I just don't worship at his altar. That's it.
Who is they?
Who is they?
Is it Evan?
Evan, do you worship at the altar of Buck Showalter?
We can get to my Buck Showalter story. Maybe do that in a second. But finish answering Andy's question.
Who is that?
No, I mean, why are there columnists in this town that write columns that say that, like, this is not his fault? Like, what the buck?
We know the
there's
answer.
A couple, well, there's a couple answers, right? There's the cynical answer and there's the real answer, right? Or okay, all right. Evan, you know, was once hired to cover sports media, then, you know, he wrote some other story and now he doesn't write about that anymore.
That is my favorite. Go on.
But so we'll get to his sports media critique. The reason why is because Showalter is not the reason the team is playing like this. Now, is he helping the situation? No, and we can get into bullpen management, all that stuff. But if you're looking at, like, what is the reason the Mets are not playing well, it's because of the players.
As always.
As always.
It's like when they play well. Like, and my only point is what you just said. Is he helping?
No, he's not. No, I mean, clearly, not. Like, especially in the past few weeks, it's like, it's very clearly sloppy baseball, you know, poor bullpen management, all that stuff.
It's the number
one point. I don't
know
who you're talking about, though.
There are people that cover the team.
This is like a media critique rather than, like, you're...
Maybe it is.
You know?
So, hey, fine. Maybe it is. Because I really don't hate Buck Showalter.
Yeah, tell your Twitter
right?
account.
Like, I mean, it's crazy. Twitter is so... It's gotten dumber through the years. It's somehow gotten stupider. Like, just any critique of anybody's performance in a public job turns into, oh, you hate this guy. Oh, he took your lunch money. Oh, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, he did no such thing. In fact, he's been generous with his time. He's been giving good interviews. Like, it's been fine. I do not hate Buck Showalter.
Would you leave a poor review under his podcast? Like, I mean, we got to just decide, like, that's the real line.
Well, the good news is you guys know who can replace me next year as the third mic on this podcast.
Oh, God.
Okay, so I was down there with Andy in spring training this year, right at the first few days, right? I think it was the day my book came out. I have a book out.
Wait, you wrote a book?
You know, we were at Mets camp.
Did you do that on purpose? You did
just now?
No, that's just you're incredible.
It just rolled out.
He's
I used to do radio.
That made me burst out loud. Holy crap!
And you see Buck in this media scrum setting, right? His little press conference room down in Florida. And I remember this from 10 years ago when I drop into little Orioles sessions. It's just he's just talking nonsense and kind of making these writers feel connected to him somehow, right? He's very chummy. And I think he probably responds to a lot of people's texts, gets back to phone calls. And so what happens is people start to like the guy, right? Oh, he's so playful and cute and, you know, and he comes off as smart just because he talks a lot. I'm not saying he's not smart, but he's not as smart as people have given him credit for a very long time. So, like, he's just a well-liked guy because he makes writers feel special. He listens to them. He banters with them. And what does anybody want? Like, we're all little puppies. You just want somebody to be, like, pay attention to us for like 5 minutes, right? And that's it. And that's what Buck does. And he's done it very well. And so he's got a group of people who are like, you know, we know Buck, and we'll talk about Buck more, and that's why he keeps getting jobs.
I'm going to push back on that. No, yeah, I am going to push back on that. Because I think he is a good manager. He has shown he's a good
manager. I'm not saying he's not, but it's like...
Right, yeah, okay, yes, I get the point you're making. I actually think now I have been to the ballpark besides one day in spring training.
I went to see John Mayer the other day. Yeah.
How was it? What'd he close with?
Fare thee well.
What is that? Whatever.
Am I screwing up the title?
Anyway, I think if you're there on a regular basis, he sort of irritates the writers because he doesn't answer the questions. Because he's kind of like, he speaks in an elliptical. He's when I come in there once or twice a week, he amuses me because I'm just sort of watching the performance and he's just kind of telling stories and things like that. And I find it funny. But then, you know, the people who are there every day are like, yeah, I've heard that story 5 times. So, like, I get what you're saying. There is a bamboozlement element. But I think the general reason why he's considered a good manager is he's a good manager. His teams have often won. He has a reputation for getting the details right, which was a thing the Mets did last year, Mark, as you roll your eyes. However, he also has a reputation for wearing out his welcome. Okay? And so this is just kind of the general cycle that he has had at several different stops. It's just accelerated because it's in New York and because he's managing a $450 million team that happens to not be playing very good baseball.
Oh, broke down palace. I'm sorry. yeah, fine. I don't totally disagree with that. I think he's developed a bit of a cult of personality, sure. And that's why the media coverage around him just kind of gets out of line with the reality of him.
I feel like he's getting drilled every day by the beat writers.
I believe.
I mean,
I think lately he has.
Yeah, been. Because it's become more obvious that the team is playing sloppy baseball, not just losing, but like making errors, running into outs. And the bullpen management lacks the, you know, the classic urgency versus orthodoxy debate. He has not displayed the proper urgency, which if you've been managing for a long time, you probably don't feel that in June because it's June. But there's also just certain concepts of like when you should use your best reliever, inning versus spot in the lineup, that he clearly remains, you know, orthodoxical on, if that is a word. And so, yeah, there's clear problems there. And I think it's been reflected in the coverage both here and elsewhere.
I mean, there are headlines out there that say things like it's not Buck's fault, which, OK, it's really hard for me to hear when this is supposedly the small, tiny details guy, the we're going to be prepared guy, and they can't keep track of how many outs there are. They can't throw to the right base. They trip over themselves. Like they can't stop using sticky stuff. Like, my goodness, it's like every mistake on the minefield, they manage to trip.
They really can't stop using sticky stuff.
Right? Like, I mean, like, dude. Tell your players to stop using the sticky stuff.
Okay, here's a headline for you, Mark. Mets' brutal loss to Phillies is a new low as the questions mount up high. Yeah, that seems to be a proper delineation of what's going on, right? Like, the team has financed a huge payroll. The general manager went out and tried to get the best players through free agency. The manager is not, you know, I don't want to say not fulfilling his end of the bargain, but like the things that he has a reputation for doing, the team is not doing. Part of that is roster construction. Part of that is whatever is going on in terms of, you know, hammering out those details. And part of it is just the players are not playing that well. You know, their two aces are not pitching like aces.
Right. They're old. The team's old. All right. So, like, I mean, in fairness, right, like this is, and you're right about all of that. Certainly there's plenty of hands on this, like, debacle. That's it. All I'm saying is that Buck's one of him.
Okay.
That's all. That's it.
Mark, you're probably going to get your wish, okay?
What? My wish is what? What's my wish is to be on a plane in Nashville.
People to lose their jobs?
That was my wish.
What's wrong with you? This guy's got a family to feed.
I don't want him to lose his job. I just want my seat on the plane to Nashville, United Airlines. That's all I wanted.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted. Instead, I'm sitting here listening to your nonsense and staring at fit and trim Evan Drellick.
All right. Let's not say things we can't take back.
Look, Buck, you know, like, if we don't have a Buck around, all we have are like the front office robot managers, right? The clones who just say the exact same thing as the AGM. And so, like, part of me doesn't want this guy to go away because he is more entertaining than, you know, 95% of managers, but he is absurd. And everybody who sits there and goes that, like, I am done with in general, kind of elevating basically anybody. Like, you know, this guy's so smart. Just a real genius, real innovator.
I'm going to tell Ken Rosenthal you said that.
I'm done.
I'm
going to
tell Ken.
I am not my boss's keeper.
I don't disagree with the point you're making, right? Like, I do think that there is a replacement level executive type. There's a replacement level manager type. And by the way, to get to that, right, you have to do a lot of things very well. And you have to have a lot of great qualities that, you know.
Like charm the media.
Or also understand baseball. Most of the, dude, have you talked to a GM? Most of these guys are not charming with the media. They're They go out of their way to be difficult, actually. Okay. But there are other ones who I think are exceptional. They also make mistakes. Those people, you know, the people who I think if I were starting a team, right, I can, like, Mark and I have talked about this, and Grant at some point will chime in with something. We've talked about, like, managers and how, like, even the managers we think of as the best in the game, we can immediately point to major things that they did wrong. Like, Kevin Cash. Is he the best manager? I'd like to see a better one. What's the one thing you remember Kevin Cash doing in a game? Taking out Blake Snell in the World Series. Okay. Craig Counsell, great reputation, you know, can run the game, can run the clubhouse. What did his team do last year? Fell apart after they traded Josh Hader. The room did not stay together. Now, did he trade Josh Hader? No, but part of his job is keep, you know, whatever. Like, we could go through all of them. You know, Dave Roberts is in the playoffs every year and has the greatest winning percentage of all time, and he makes mistakes in the postseason. Aaron Boone is, like, second all time in winning percentage, and he makes mistakes. You know, it's a job that engenders criticism. It's a public facing job. I just think, like, it is a job that has a serious importance, but it is middle management at the end of the day. It is middle management. And so usually,
but enough about Craig. Yeah.
And so usually the responsibility, right, is either the person above the middle manager or the people who are being managed by the middle manager. Grant, are you with me?
I would just like to announce that I have now thought about Buck Showalter twice as much in my life as I had before this podcast. I don't study managers. You know what I mean? Like, if it's not Bruce Bochy or if it's not Gabe Kaplan or it's not part of my job, like, I look at Dave Roberts and I say, wait, he must be doing something right. Like, they're always good. Unless they're screwing up right in front of me, I just assume that, yeah, they're kind of, there's a replacement level. And then there's, like, you get to make fun of this player level or this manager level. Like, I don't think that there's a genius level necessarily. Maybe there are some, I don't know. I just don't think about managers that much. And so when I look at the Mets, I think, yeah, Verlander and Scherzer, they're like 80 years worth of pitcher and they're not pitching well. And wow, Jeff McNeil, where did his power go? Starling Marte, where did his power go? That's how I think of things. But I'm not in the weeds, and I don't know if that's a good thing. Like, maybe there is something to me thinking more about Buck Showalter and his job of bringing people together and stopping the sloppy play and all that stuff. So, I don't know. That's just my, like, philosophy of lazy analysis, I guess.
I should disclose that Buck and I, this is 6 years ago. I don't know if he remembers it. He probably does, because I feel like he's the kind of person who would remember it. But we did get into it when he was with the Orioles and I was covering the Red Sox. There's some chippy back and forth, a subsequent stare down in the dugout, you know, that kind of thing.
You stared down Buck in his dugout?
No, he stared at me. He just, you know, a good 10 seconds of just, you know.
Wow, giving you the eye.
I'm not going to, you know, he had done something dumb, okay? You know, he takes little shots at other teams. He's always done this. And the Red Sox they'd been really sick to the point that you can't not talk about it. And in his little Orioles scrum, he took a shot at, you know, our guys haven't been feeling well, but, you know, we don't feel like we need to broadcast it everywhere. So, you know, the Red Sox reporters hear about this, and we go to the visiting clubhouse at
Fenway. You got to defend the local team.
Oh, yeah. No, I've always been known.
No, I know. Yeah, keep going.
As, you know, Mr. Rah-Rah guy. And, you know, at this time in Red Sox media, it was starting to crumble. There weren't as many kind of more veteran people who were going to ask the question. So, you know, I take it upon myself. Younger, eager TV guy now at NBC Sports Boston or whatever the hell that network was called then. I don't even know if it's still on the air. And, you know, I started asking him, Buck, you're taking, you know, shots at the Red Sox about the flu, and he tries to dodge me, and it was really dumb. And, you know, of course he was, right? But he couldn't just own up to it. Like, yeah, I was trying to needle the Red Sox. Like, clearly you were. Like, they're sick, Buck. It happens.
It's tired, isn't it? He's been tired like this for a while, and he did it the other day on Sunday, where like he's getting asked about that horrible bullpen decision, and he's acting like it's so absurd that he can't comprehend the line of questioning, which is just about the most tired card a manager can play. My goodness, just stop pretending like it's like, oh, this is incredibly stupid to ask. Like, my God.
That's what managers say in that situation. That's just what gets said.
If you're the reporter in that room, right, like you are required to just swallow that rather than being like, you're being thick. You're being a jerk, for I was about to say a different word, right? And I don't have the patience for that anymore, right? Like Buck Showalter or anybody standing up there and just delivering total nonsense to me. What, you know, I'm 35 and a half, damn it. I'm not waiting through that anymore. Like I'm done with that.
I think you guys are assigning a little too much value to the explanation over the actual decision. Because if you see the world through that prism, right, and I'm not agreeing with the prism. I think obviously, you know, you should use your best relievers if they are on board, which I assume Dave Robertson is, maybe he isn't, who cares. You should use your best relievers to face the opposing team's best hitters, okay, well stipulated, right? Unfortunately, not everyone in baseball is as enlightened as the four of us, and some still view things through a slightly more dogmatic prism where the closers pitch the ninth, right? If you view the world through that way, then the question doesn't make sense. Now, the bigger problem is that you view the world through that way, not the explanation.
But like Andy, he's done that. That's the thing. He has done the very thing that
he
you
did
said.
It with
That's
Diaz.
Why it was bizarre.
He did it with
no. He's
Diaz.
Done it with David Robertson this year.
Has he?
Where well, he's had him? Yes. That's why it's like nonsensical.
Look, it was
and
terrible.
Disingenuous, and it's
why,
effing how tired.
How is it
That's
every episode I'm defending Buck Showalter? How is it every episode I am defending Buck Showalter when A, I don't care, and B, I mostly agree with Mark? Like every episode, somehow I get put in this. Thanks, Grant.
Maybe it's five. Maybe he is a genius, right? Because it's five-dimensional chess, and now we're not talking about his players. Right, it's all a mission drawn on the
play. I don't know. Oh, yeah, maybe.
Whoa.
Maybe.
That's genius.
You know, so much Whoa. Of this is chicken or the egg, right?
Sure.
Because like
sure.
I was talking to some Rangers people this past weekend, and like they are just, you know, raving about Bruce Bochy. Just raving about Bruce Bochy, right? And Bruce Bochy is like a Hall of Fame manager, probably. I don't know. He's won 3 World Series. Was Bruce Bochy considered a genius tactician? Maybe like in his time, but not among like the current set of reporters, you know, who'd seen him in the later stages. But what does he provide? He provides like a steady presence. He provides, you know, calmness. He provides all the things that sound really great when your team is winning. If the team was playing poorly, you know, steady presence, that's not what you want. You want someone, you know, shaking things up. You want someone not accepting the status quo. I mean, just so much of it is like, you know, can chemistry be created or does chemistry, you know, come from winning, right? Like, I think it's just hard to decide where it begins and where it ends. And a lot of it just depends on how the players are playing. And if, like, does it reflect poorly on Buck that the Mets have stopped throwing to the right base, that they make errors, they just seem to drop a pop-up every day? Yeah, it does reflect poorly on that, on him. It does. It also reflects poorly on the players. Learn how to call off the shortstop. You've been an outfielder for your whole life.
I think this is a topic for another day, but why is a manager responsible for a player's focus on a defensive play, right? Like is it like the manager, we shouldn't break this down. I'm sure we got other topics, right? But isn't that an interesting concept? Like this is the manager's fault that this guy forgot to move his glove an inch to the left.
I think in this particular case, when one has built their entire
He's
brand
gonna do it again. He's doing
of
it
these
again.
Little things,
He's doing it again.
Then of course
new,
it's
new
gonna
bell.
Like
new bell.
You know, I deserve that. I deserve that. As a middle manager, I deserve that.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I think we've talked plenty about
Grant's just been asleep for 20 minutes.
I just woke up, so this is great. Like, there's like an extra host here. You guys are ranting. I'm in my own head.
Every week we do this. I can't believe we do this every week.
Let's choose a topic that we don't usually get to on the roundtable. The Oakland Athletics might be moving to Las Vegas. Evan, is there something you can do about this? Like, just any levers you can pull to stop that?
If they move to Vegas, I assume the Killers. Do you see the poster there and the poster there? You know, I assume the Killers, who are from Las Vegas, will play frequently, and you know, this might give me an opportunity to see the Killers more. So I don't know if the premise is correct that I want to prevent it, but no, the only people who could do something are the owners, and to date, we don't have any evidence that they wouldn't want to do it, except for the logic. The very basic logic of why would you want to move a team to such a small market and also create another perpetual revenue sharing recipient with the smallest stadium of any state? Besides logic, no, I don't know that I can help.
What is the explanation then for why the Major League Baseball is basically not standing in the way of this?
The explanation the league gives and the commissioner has given is we've tried for a decade in Oakland. The city won't give us what we want, what we need, what we deserve in a public-private partnership, which just means they won't give us money or enough money, as much money as we want. They call it partnership. It's like HR when they call themselves people partners, but we can talk about that another day. it's not about partnership. So, I mean, that they're impatient, and, you know, the path to expansion is getting at least the path that the commissioner has explained. You know, we need to get the A's and Rays stadiums settled. And why does expansion matter here? Well, there's a lot of money that comes in to the owners if you get to expansion, right? So they want this to move forward. They're impatient. And, you know, the interesting question here is, all right, is there some sort of last minute play that does Oakland and MLB start talking again, or Fisher and Oakland start talking again? Is there a contingent of owners that say, you know what, we really don't want this? But to this point, we have no belief that that's going to happen. I don't.
So the idea is just you take the hit in that, you know, you move out of the bigger market into the smaller market with the idea that you open up Nashville and Salt Lake City, or Nashville and Charlotte, or Nashville and whatever, right? And that's a net gain for the 30 owners.
Yeah, and one of the questions I wanted to ask at the most recent owners meetings but didn't get to, and I don't know that he would have answered it at this point, is, well, if they leave Oakland, you could always try to move back to Oakland at some point. That you know, maybe there's some perverse world where Oakland is a more valuable expansion market than it is, that you could maybe charge more for Oakland than you could charge for Vegas. in expansion. I don't know. I mean, that I'm purely speculating. I have no idea that they would want to go back to Oakland later on. But yeah, I think the goal of getting public money for stadiums is something that they're trying to achieve in a lot of different markets right now, even if it's just renovations. They're trying to do it in Milwaukee. They're trying to do it in Arizona. And we're going to arrive at this new round of trying to get full new stadiums. You know, you're going to see a whole other round of that in the next, I don't know, 10, 20 years here. And I think being able to secure whatever, you know, $380 million from Las Vegas, that's part of their goals. That's part of what Rob Manfred tries to do. And other owners appreciate that, right? Because it keeps the precedent going of we're having somebody else pay for our stadium.
You know, you brought up a second team potentially or an expansion team in Oakland. But I'm curious, Evan, I mean, is there a world in which there's just a second team in the Bay Area? Because it's such a big market. And whether it's in Oakland or San Jose, which obviously there's the complication of the Giants and their territorial rights or whatever, but it's a big market, right? Like the Bay Area is a big enough market to potentially support two, especially if the alternative is, you know, what is it? What's Vegas, the 42nd ranked market in the country or whatever, something like that. So I don't know. Is that feasible at all in your mind, or is that just so complicated?
You got to talk to the Giants, right? They're being, I don't have the map in front of me, but clearly they are leveraging their territorial rights to the maximum ability that they can. And, you know, why they would back off of that, I don't even think in my head, well, could there be an owner vote that could change that? I don't know. I'd have to pull up the Constitution if I even have an updated one, because they keep that stuff pretty under lock and chain. You know, that's the kind of thing that, like, if the other owners tried to tell the Giants, no, you've got to change your territorial rights, you could have a lawsuit, right? The Giants could, I mean, we've already seen lawsuits between a city and a team over this, but you could have team suing the commissioner's office. When you have something and you have a right and the right is worth a lot of money, anybody trying to change it's going to be a real hassle.
But what if that right is what's standing in the way of them getting to their 32 teams? Wouldn't they conceivably face pressure from the other owners to, like, actually waive those if that's what was standing in the way of getting to the promised land, which is 32, you can reshape everything, everything's balanced, all the money flowing into the sport from two extra franchises, that sort of thing. I mean, is there a situation where that could happen, Evan?
If you're saying, would I grab my popcorn and be interested to watch the owners fight for years over territorial rights? Absolutely, yes. But I don't think that, you know, we know there are other cities they could expand to, right? Like, if that was clearly going to take a huge amount of time to resolve. But I need to know a little bit more about that process. It is possible, theoretically, that maybe an owner vote would be able to remap it. I just don't know. That, to me, instinctually, that's wrong. I wish I had prepped that before coming here. I didn't. I apologize.
Just my finger a little bit on the pulse of the area. If the A's are gone, they're gone, and it's going to be the Giants market. This is a market that is used to having just one team, whether it's the Sharks or the Warriors. It's a big market. At the same time, generally fine with just one team, the Niners now. I think that's just how it's going to be. The Bay Area likes their soccer, the Earthquakes and the MLS and Oakland Roots, level below. They're getting the Oakland Soul is moving up to the NS or NWSL. They're probably going to get a WNBA team at some point. They're fine. I think they're fine. And they're not going to be hunting for an expansion team. I don't even think it would make sense as leverage unless you had like a wacky billionaire come in and say, I need my own baseball team and I'm going to build my own stadium. But I don't even think baseball would want that. They want the public money. So I don't think the A's are gone. The A's are gone. That's my take.
You're saying San Francisco is like a one team area, or the Bay is a generality, right? Because
the Bay is a generality. Like, it's just.
Yeah. Because we had all these other teams there.
But they left. You
know? They're all gone.
You notice they're not there anymore, right? They all moved.
I mean, the 49ers are barely in the Bay Area now.
They're in the desert.
It was, so far. I mean, goodness.
It was one of the best parts, though, is that you could be at a barbecue and it's like across from you is an A's fan and you're a Giants fan and you're razzing each other, and then you'd come together and you were both Warriors fans, and so you'd always have a shared. But then it's like this buddy, oh, Niners, Raiders. That's gone. Like, it's a one team market now, and I don't know why. Oakland's like it's a vibrant city. It's a great city. I love Oakland. So I don't get it, but that's just kind of how it is. How am I the one that's killing the podcast? You guys are talking about Buck Showalter for half an hour.
So, it's just gab, gab, gab.
I open my mouth.
Hey, why don't we just like hate on Jordan Poole for a couple of minutes? You want to do that?
Wait, is Jordan Poole's the guy who got hit, right? So he got punched in the face and then they traded him?
He was a maddening player to watch. I'm trying to think of a baseball comp, but like just a ultra talented guy, maddening to watch. Just every so often his brain would like blow a
every
a fuse
annoying
and just,
quality.
Yeah, it's just wild. But Chris Paul is not easy on the eyes for Warriors fans, certainly. So we shall see. Yeah. Welcome to Warriors Roundtable.
I'll say this for A's fans. I think if you were to rank things that could potentially stop the move, like the Yankees or other big market teams are probably your best bet. If you had enough large market teams that were like, screw this, I'm not propping up this team for the next 50 years or 30 years. There's no reason to take a team that is in a market that should be a revenue sharing contributor to recipient. I think that would be that doesn't mean they necessarily would end up staying in Oakland at that point, but you could have teams say, I'm sorry, we're not allowing you to go to Vegas. You got to go to a different market or something like that.
So you probably have much more information than I do, or a much better answer for this, but how much does the idea of legalized gambling and baseball playing footsie with gambling, how much does that tie into the move? Because to me, when I'm looking at baseball and gambling, it's as of right now, it's like DraftKings. It's not necessarily tethered to Vegas. I think that's a very old-timey way to look at it. Like, gambling's national. It's not just in one central area, but how much is that a part of this? Do they want a foothold in Vegas for that reason?
I'm sure it wouldn't hurt. One interesting perspective was shared with me about, well, would the casinos want it? And, with the Raiders, they play what? They have eight home games, eight or nine. So that's not taking people out of the casinos for a long period of time. 81 home dates for a baseball game. There is some sort of balance between number of attractions in Vegas and keeping the people inside the casino to keep gambling. And, who is going to be going to these 81 games? One of the things that the Jeremy Aguero, for the record, for anybody who watched it, this A's consultant who was doing a lot of the talking along with the Chamber of Commerce fellow from Las Vegas, one of the things he kept talking about is how many people are going to come to Vegas to watch this team specifically. And I'm just skeptical of that, as I think a lot of people should be, that the A's are going to be the draw. The reason that somebody plans a trip to Las Vegas doesn't quite compute with me. I'm sure there are numbers that exist that they can try to make that argument. But
the argument that they make is that, because I did a little bit of reporting over the last year, the argument is that you will come to see your team play. You will plan a trip in the way that, like, when the Detroit Red Wings play the, Vegas Golden Knights, people from Detroit will come. So the same idea with, whomever, the folks in the Midwest, basically, will come in.
So all the Oakland people are going to come to Vegas.
No. That's what happens with the football team. People from Oakland and LA come out there. Because it's eight or nine times a year. The idea would be that they would build up a fan base in Las Vegas. It would also be supplemented by tourists coming in. I do think tourists will come. I don't know how many people will specifically come, be like, oh man, we got to catch Tigers A's, in June. But I wouldn't completely discount that. The bigger question though is one that, everyone from like officials in Las Vegas to Bryce Harper have raised, like, can the town support another sports franchise, one that doesn't have a history there, one that's coming there in such like a, it's essentially like a jalopy of a franchise, and like has just such little enthusiasm and reason for hope. Like, are people, like at least the Vegas Golden Knights, they were an expansion team. They were new. It was complete.
They were first.
Yes. They were first.
Yeah.
Huge.
They were first. Right? And they were also good right away, by the way. They like made the final, they somehow made the finals immediately. The A's are probably not going to be good in the next few years. Right. So it's a tougher sell.
The town itself, too, is a transient city. No one is actually from Las Vegas. Right. So, and I know this like because I had a lot of friends from there. Like, having gone to the University of Nevada, a lot of my friends from college were from Southern Nevada, Vegas kids, Henderson, Green Valley High, whatever. Right. When you ask them what their teams are, it's what their parents rooted for, because like they brought it with them to Las Vegas. And so in football, that works just fine because it's a national sport. Baseball's not. And so that might work when the Yankees come passing through town, where all the Yankee fans come out. And that already happens in Oakland, by the way, because like everything gets more expensive and like there's just more people in the yard. So that'll happen, certainly. But that's an exception in baseball. Whereas in the NFL, it's not. Every team that comes through does that, because the NFL is a national sport. Right. But so
81 dates, right?
And 81. Yeah. It's so, yeah, what Bryce is pointing.
Who's filling those seats?
You're not going to get 30,000 Cubs fans for, like, you're just not. You'll probably get decent numbers, but you're not going to get 30,000.
No. And so, like, it's hard to envision them because, again, they're not the Knights where it was started there. It's organic to the place. You know, this is a franchise that's being imported. And on top of that, as your description's exactly right, they're a jalopy. They're hard to root for right now, right? So I think that's, and they're going to be hard to root for the foreseeable future, because it's not like they're going to spend money to bring players in. Why would you do that?
What if they if they signed Ohtani?
Oh, man. That would be unbelievable. I love it.
If Ohtani was just like, I want to resurrect this franchise. And
that
also,
would be so great.
I love Pot Limit Omaha, so I want to live in Las Vegas.
Dude, that's it, man. That's what they should do. Sign Ohtani, then bring Buck over. That'll fix everything.
I think that there is something to, you know, a transient city, and you have something, you have a parallel with Washington, right? With DC, where you have, that's a transient city. That is, but you get this with, especially with the Vegas Golden Knights, you have the people who aren't transients and want some sense of like, this is ours. All these transients can go, you know, go away. This is ours. This is a palpable sense of regional pride. And then you get the transients who want to like tether themselves to that area. So they're adopting that team. And there is a path for that, but I think the Knights took it. I don't think that there's a lot of that to go around. You know, the Nationals did it, I think, pretty well, because the Wizards are the Wizards. You know what I mean? So I think that there is that path. But I think for 81 days, when you've already got an NHL team that plays a ton of games in a better kind of climate, I just think that that path is gone. But I don't know.
Remember how bad the Nationals were for quite some time. I mean, the first 6 years of their existence, right? Like, they were, you know, I don't know if they were in last place, but they certainly weren't in the playoffs, not until 2012. And then they, you know, they obviously built up a pretty, you know, commendable decade from there. So, like, it takes for quite a while. And the sport, it's gotten harder to do that. You know, it's just harder and harder. You know, tanking is less fruitful. There's more measures against it, and the opposing teams are smarter. You know, you can't just pick off, you know, things like all the things that the A's did well 10 years ago. A bunch of other teams do well now, too. They're so far behind. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's, I think there is a path, but it's a lot thornier than it used to be. And you are right that the, you know, like, I think Las Vegas is a real sports town. I think it's, you know, they can certainly support a baseball team. I just don't know if they would want to support the Oakland Athletics as currently constructed.
Yeah, you put a winner anywhere, people yes. will show up. It almost becomes beyond, okay, there are going to be seasons where you're not winning, and then you go beyond the honeymoon period of the first 3 years when it's all shiny and new, and you got the corporate people buying all the seats and, you know, giving out the tickets to their clients. Like, first 3-5 years, I'm sure I'd be fine. But then, you know, what happens? You know, if they're not winning, if they have down seasons, you got a 30,000 seat stadium, it's not full. And then it's just another drag on, from a big market team perspective, the big market teams.
Evan, did you enjoy the commissioner's comments about the reverse boycott?
So much. Yeah. Look how much content I got out of it, right? That's the cynical. You know, I wrote a column on that the day of your wedding. I sat in my hotel in Philadelphia and for hours, didn't go outside in the sun. So all these different bridal parties going by in the lobby of the Notary Hotel in Philadelphia, and was just writing a column about Robin.
Oh, I had a better day.
Yeah.
I'm probably in the wrong. I just find him funny.
He's Grant.
He's just funny. Like, he's funny. I thought the stuff he said about Pride Night was really, I did not care for that. I thought that really missed the mark. And so I don't want to conflate two issues. I think that was pretty gross. I do think but it was also part and parcel for his method of speaking, right? He is a labor attorney.
Yeah, but listen. There are labor attorneys who Silver, I believe, was an attorney. I don't know if he's a labor attorney. Goodell, I believe, was a labor lawyer. I mean, you can be a labor lawyer, a trained fighter, and not always fight. And I agree with you as well that, like, there is an entertainment to this. Like, I sit there and go, like, man, you know,
he's done it again.
What is this guy not willing to say? And like, if there's fun to be found in the off the field role in baseball, sometimes it is in the extremity and absurdity of the personalities, you know, just like they can almost be caricatures of themselves sometimes. So yeah, like it is almost like, just what a shot. Like, wow, he was willing to say and do, you know, like really twist the knife there. And then it's very silly afterward when he says, you know, this was taken out of context. I'd love to see a study of somebody objectively looking at every time somebody says something is taken out of context, 10%, 5% taken out of context. Like it's the last line of defense because there's nothing else you could say. But it was totally unnecessary. I just don't think it does anything. And you get these conspiracy theorists who think it's five-dimensional chess of, oh, he's taking the heat off John Fisher. Yeah, you're right. Everybody's forgotten about John Fisher.
No, I mean, I just think it's his nature to be contentious and to get in the shots. I mean, that's just who he is. It's what I don't know why anyone would suspect he would change the way the man described the World Series trophy as a piece of metal. Like, this is who he is.
Sometimes you shuffle chips and sometimes you don't shuffle chips. It might be in your nature to shuffle chips a lot, but you can choose and control yourself to not always shuffle.
Yeah, but there are structures in place that punish me for shuffling chips.
Right. And that's fair.
Whereas
that's fair.
Like he's clearly been enabled to do this.
Grant, we've been talking about this sort of on our internal chat, but the man cuts a great promo. I think that's really it. That, like, the second the lights come on, he gets in that mode where he's got to be the villain. He's got to be the 1980s heel. He's like the Million Dollar Man, but sweating more.
Do we want the audio for this? You want to splice in the audio? I'll send it to you.
I mean, isn't that what this is, though?
Grant clearly does not agree with us, by the way. Grant is visibly pained this entire episode.
No. I'm going to save mine for the end because we're almost out of time, and I got to – I'll bring it up again. But, yeah, no, I don't agree. I think I got words, and I
Go on, Grant.
No.
Yes, Grant.
No.
Go on, Grant.
No, it's just anyways, this has been episode 55 of The Roundtable, the only podcast that – one of the hosts finds Rob Manfred funny, but Tim Robinson not funny. It's the only baseball podcast where you'll get someone like that. All right, we will be back next week to talk about Buck Showalter, the A's. We'll see you then.
I was very wrong.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.